All right, so my first job, my first official job, was at this restaurant called Pinky's. Pinky's. It is up by UCI. It is actually the same building that the current In-N-Out Burgers sits on up by UCI. Anybody ever been in that In-N-Out? All right, I love that In-N-Out. It's great In-N-Out. And my job, it was a sit-down restaurant, Pinky's. It's kind of a 50s-themed restaurant, burgers, fries, shakes, stuff like that. It was a sit-down restaurant, but in the back, they had a drive-thru window. And my job, I was 17 years old, filled out all the paperwork at the teen center in Irvine, California, and I got placed at Pinky's to be a drive-thru attendant, essentially, at Pinky's. Now, I should be looking at looks of concern on all of your faces by now. But all that to say, so I had worked for a friend who was my youth leader. He was a painter, and I worked with him. He kind of paid under the table. We'll keep that between ourselves. But this was like my first official W-4, fill it out, you know, all that stuff. This was my first official job. And as with any job that you might have had, the first thing that you go through with your job is orientation. Orientation, I love a good orientation. This was a good orientation. They showed me the window that I was going to stand at. They showed me the menu that people were going to order off of. I remember we actually walked outside and we walked through the drive-thru and they showed what people were going to experience as they go through. They showed me the intercom, which is a cause of many issues in a drive-thru. You get the idea. They showed me the cash register, and they told me that, you know, what do you do with the intercom? Somebody pulls up, it starts to beep, you push the button, and you say, "Welcome to Pinky's, what can we make for you?" There's certain things. This was orientation. They would order, I'd push buttons on the register, it would spit out tickets to the cooks, who did not speak any English, but that was okay because I was too, you know, I had 3 years of Spanish in high school and it helped nothing. Okay, but all that to say, they would wrap it up and then I would take it, put it in bags, and then hand it out to the people who ordered. I would eventually find out it's a little more complicated than that. But that is orientation. Orientation gets you the beginning of something. The basics of something. We'll come back to my Pinky's experience later on, but I do love orientation. You start something new, there's always some kind of orientation. They tell you what is up, what's down, where you are. You start a new job, you start some onboarding process where they take you through. And you get on the payroll, you do the paperwork. You might get handed an employee handbook. I don't know where you work. Maybe you get an employee handbook or something like that. Maybe you get a uniform. Maybe you get a shirt. Maybe you get some kind of a vest that you wear. I don't know. Again, I don't know where you've worked. I've worked at places like that. At Pinky's, I got a shirt, and I wore my Pinky shirt. It was not pink. It was blue with pink writing on it. So there you go, Pinky's. You might get something free, like free swag. Sometimes when you walk in, it's like hats and banners. You get a new hat, or you get some kind of thing that you get that's free from your company. Maybe you get a mug. Welcome to Taft Avenue Community Church. Have you been to our orientation class? Right? That's the idea, that you would get these sorts of things. And you might get a space, like a desk or a cubicle or an office or maybe a work truck or something like that. Someone shows you the ropes, how to handle equipment, how to process material, where to be, what time to be there. Orientation is awesome because orientation at the beginning, it shows so much promise that is to come. How many of you guys have been through an orientation recently? Maybe college orientation, maybe work orientation. Sometimes you go through life and you're like, it's been a long time since I've been through orientation, but sometimes that's when we need it the most, is to kind of revisit those things. I love orientation because orientation is like there's so much certainty and confidence. And I remember standing at the drive-thru window thinking, I got this. I know what I'm doing. I know what the cash register does. I didn't know anything, but I had confidence because it was orientation. It was so positive. It was so much promise to be looked forward to. It focuses on the basics, the simplicity. The clarity of the basics is often a way to reset or get off to a good start. And in our series on wisdom, as we move into wisdom, we start with our orientation, and our orientation comes to us from the book of Proverbs. If you want to know about skillful living, if you want to know about navigating the world, if you want to know what kind of a world we live in and what kind of a world God has placed you in and wants you to walk through, Proverbs is orientation. Proverbs tells you what's up, what's down, what's right, and what's wrong. And there's nothing in between that. It's good, it's bad. It's right, it's wrong. It's the wicked, it's the righteous. It's the wise, it's the fool. It tells you which way is up. And Proverbs is our orientation, and the Bible's orientation to wisdom. It might not be the last word on wisdom. We're going to find out there's other things to say, but it certainly is the first word on wisdom. Proverbs anticipates, like other orientations, so many good things. It talks so much about success, about healing, about moving in a right direction, about doing things that are going to promote thriving. It's full of certainty and confidence. There are right ways of doing things and there are wrong ways of doing things. It hits the basics and it's intended to get people off to a good start. Particularly in the Jewish culture, Proverbs was used to train kids. And some of you guys might have experienced that like Proverbs was something that you experienced as a kid. These are the things, the basics, the things that young people need to know from their parents. As a matter of fact, Proverbs, if you look at the whole book of Proverbs, probably what you experience with Proverbs is like what I experienced, which is like there are like, it feels like there's hundreds of little sayings in Proverbs. It's kind of like if you walk on a beach and there's like 1,000 rocks on the beach. And you're trying to navigate through the beach. And what you really need is like a path that's not rocky, it's just a path. And what Proverbs does is the first 9 chapters of Proverbs is like this path before you get to all the rocks, to all the stones. And the first 9 chapters are written as if a father is teaching and training his children. A father and a mother, of course, wisdom, Lady Wisdom is the best teacher. And so what we hear, even in our passage today, open up, if you have your Bibles, let's open up to Proverbs chapter 3, what we had read for us today. Jim had a great read of Proverbs for us today. We're going to be in chapter 3, but we're really going to be all over the book of Proverbs. A little bit of a tour of the book of Proverbs, a little bit of orientation for us this morning. But in Proverbs 3:1, it starts out, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments." And so one of the things that we find out is that throughout the book, especially in the first 9 chapters, there is going to be this sense in which Proverbs is going to speak to us like a parent would be speaking to their child who they are training. If you go back 1 chapter to chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commandments," and then it ends in verse 5, "then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." And at the very, very beginning of the book, in 1:8, it says really clearly what this is. "Hear, my son," we might add in "my daughter," "hear, my son and my daughter, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching." And so Proverbs, in a lot of ways, this orientation book, is a lot like the instruction you received from your parents when you were a kid. I remember with my dad, the first thing that came to mind when I think about the training I received from my dad was how to mow the lawn. Actually, it wasn't mowing the lawn, because he would mow the lawn because we were too young, but he would give us these handheld clippers, and it was our job to edge the lawn with handheld clippers. Nowadays, I'm like, don't they have other tools for that kind of stuff? But we were on our knees. We were, how do you edge the lawn? And we were being instructed, As young, we were like, I don't know, 7, 8 years old, and we're out there with Dad, and he's mowing and we're edging, and that was instruction. It was orientation. Eventually, we moved up to the mower. And eventually, you know, as an adult, I got the weed, you know, the thing that actually does the actual edging rather than a child with clippers. But anyway, I get there's wisdom in my dad with that, right? That is wisdom in training in that way. I think of all these things about my dad, even just hiking, how to use a compass, how to throw a baseball. I remember my mom teaching us how to make cookies, how to get all the ingredients together. That's instruction. That's the basics of that. Do you guys, I mean, as you think about experiences, do experiences come to mind for you in that way? And I would imagine that for all of us, we have some kind of this introductory training from our parents or from someone that loved us enough to spend time orienting us to the way things work. I think when we were in staff meeting and we were talking about the book of Proverbs, and Proverbs are these short sayings that are meant to have an impact. And I started and as parental instruction, right? And so one of the things that we did in staff meeting is there certain things that your parents used to say to you as you were walking out the door to go out for the evening? Or is there something that you would say to your kids as they walked out the door? In our family, it mostly came from Kelly, but she would always say, right as they were walking out, make good choices. Orientation right there. Orientation, make good choices. I had another friend, as in their family, before they walked out the door, their phrase was, remember who you are. Remember who you are. Does anybody else have different? What do you just yell one out? What did you have for your kids, or what was told you? Keep it PG, everybody. When you walked out the door, when they walked out the door, what would you say?
Love you.
That's a great proverb. Good.
Behave.
That's just one word that has a lot of meaning. It's orienting, though, right?
Be.
Okay, I heard. Be safe, do good. And then Lee said something about the police, right? Okay, don't bring the police home. See, these are all orienting. Like if you're confused about what's right, what's good, what's bad, what you want, what you don't want, these are orienting things. Any other things that are said? I don't care who's right or wrong. Don't get blood on my fenders. Jack, this is great, Jack. See, this is the kind of thing, it's like sharing time with Aunt Jackie, right? But you get the idea that like there's this sense in which when we walk out, the parental orienting wisdom is supposed to guide us and keep us on track. That is what the book of Proverbs is about. The book of Proverbs is about just keeping us on the path. And as a matter of fact, in the book of Proverbs, there really are two paths. And in what scholars call, in the wisdom tradition, is the two paths wisdom. And it's this idea that in Proverbs parental instruction, there's a right way of doing things and a wrong way of doing things. And this is the two paths tradition. There is a way of the wise, but there's also a way of the fools. There is a path of the just or the righteous, and there is a path of the wicked. There's a path that leads to life, you get the idea, and there's a path that leads to death. There's a path that leads to success, and there's a path that leads to ruin. And I think for me, I was thinking this week just about wisdom and about my own experience with the book of Proverbs and orientation, and Proverbs is this orienting book, and I was thinking about my own journey of faith and how Proverbs, the role it's played in my own journey of faith. It's been, and as I was thinking about it, and I would just encourage you to think about just your own, because what we did in staff meeting was we talked about our favorite Proverbs, and I'm going to read some of the ones that really have stuck with me. I can't read all of them. There's hundreds of them, but I just want to read a few that have stuck with me, but I would just encourage you to think about your own experience with the book of Proverbs. What are some Proverbs that come to mind? You don't have to, we're not going to yell them out right now, but I do want you to just think about it, and even your experience with how Proverbs has played a role in your life of faith. I'll start with this. Every men's group I've ever been in has offered the advice of Bible reading. Proverbs has 31 chapters in it. Read one chapter a day every month. I guess you don't like the end of Proverbs in February, anyway, you get the idea. But 31, you don't like the ode to wisdom or the wise woman in 30. Anyway, not every, okay. All right, back to it. But the idea is that I was really shocked by just how much, especially in men's ministry, how Proverbs has had that kind of a role. And as I was thinking back, just how prominent that is among men that I have worked with. And I do remember times in my life where I followed that advice, reading a chapter from Proverbs every day for months on end. And it was really good to get oriented to the entirety of the book. The thing was, not every proverb kind of sticks with you. If you read through Proverbs, not every proverb sticks with you. There really are a lot of things about where you're at in your life or what you're experiencing in your life that a proverb actually lands on your heart or on your mind. And that's not to say that you don't love Jesus if not every proverb lands, but it doesn't. It's just the nature of the experience. I do remember this, one of the first Bibles I was given, I even hesitate to call it a Bible, but it included the Gospel of John, the book of Psalms, and the book of Proverbs. I don't know, that's a canon within a canon, I suppose, right? Like that's a put it in your back pocket and you have everything you need for life and godliness, right? So even in my own experience, the idea that Proverbs has played this very central role. And this week, as I was thinking about Proverbs, this is the Bible that I use today. It's an ESV. But what I did was I pulled off my shelf my Bible from my high school and college days. This is a beast of a Bible. It was actually given to me as a gift, which is really cool. And it's a Thompson Chain Reference Bible. Does anybody have a Thompson Chain Reference? Yes. This is the translation in here is the New International Version from 1984. Now, the New International Version, if you buy it, it's an updated to 2011. A lot of the verses that I've memorized in my life have come out of this Bible. So NIV 1984 is what comes out of my mouth when I'm like giving, saying something from memory or something like that. But what I did was I opened it up to the book of Proverbs and I looked at what were the things that I underlined back in those days. And I realized that there were certain Proverbs that really landed on me in a very orienting season of my life. I came to faith when I was a freshman in high school. It wasn't long after that that I got this Bible, and I took that Bible all the way through college. And so it's really kind of interesting to see what sort of things landed. And for me, when I think of the book of Proverbs, and this is good, I want you to do the same thing. You don't have to yell it out, but what's the first proverb that comes to mind when you think of the book of Proverbs? And what I would say is that whatever comes to mind is something that has landed on you, right? This is kind of the nature of instruction, that sometimes we might hear things over and over and over again, but it might not hit us until it lands on us. The first proverb that comes to my mind when I think of the book of Proverbs is Proverbs 12:18. And in NIV 1984, it says this: "Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." That's just the first thing that I think about. When I think about the book of Proverbs, that is the verse that comes to mind. I remember we memorized it up at camp. We even sang a song to it. "Reckless words pierce like a sword." Okay, anyway, you guys, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, okay? But it's awesome, and it landed on me. Because I think not only did it land on me because I knew it was true, and I had experienced that not only had my words brought healing to people, but my words had also hurt people. And I recognized the nature, like I had experienced the proverb. right? And that's one of the reasons why it landed on me. And a lot of the Proverbs are about speech and the tongue. And a number of these, and for me, I think the book of Proverbs, if there is an overwhelm, because the book of Proverbs, Lady Wisdom knows a lot of stuff about everything. Money, sex, power, work, words. But for me, words have been a major theme in the book of Proverbs. Like, for example, Proverbs 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. What a great proverb. The tongue has the power of life and death. Sometimes we remember it because we've experienced it. Sometimes we remember a proverb because of who said it or who spoke it. I remember as a high school student, there was a man in our church. This was at Woodbridge Community Church in Irvine. His name was Jay Shaner. I love Jay. Jay, I totally respected Jay. Jay was awesome. And one day, I remember we were having this conversation about Christian talk radio. And Jay, who would love Jesus and was super well-read, knew a ton of things, Jay said, "I don't listen to that stuff." And I was like, "Well, why not?" And he quoted a proverb. Proverbs 10:19. When words are many, sin is not absent. He who holds his tongue is wise. And I remember just being like, drop the mic. I mean, gee, like when words are many, sin is not absent. That's why I don't listen to Christian talk radio. Whoa! I mean, sometimes it hits because the person who says it has thought it through and has applied it in a way that you realize there's wisdom in holding your tongue. And of course, I have a job where I just say a bunch of stuff. So this proverb is like a cautionary tale for me. When words are many, sin is not absent. And it's probably not going to go any shorter today than just because of this proverb. So anyway, but you get the idea. So I remember the person I deeply respected, the fact that he quoted the proverb, it landed on me in a way that maybe otherwise it would not have. I remember my youth pastor and friend Dale Gustafson talking about political discourse and kind of, this was 25 years ago, but talking about this idea that Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I remember him talking about that in the context of just a really harsh debate that was going on about abortion. And he just said, everyone is yelling at each other. It's a gentle answer that turns away wrath. And even just, again, to hear a person that I respected bring a proverb into a situation made it land on me in such a way that here I am 25 years later, 30 years later, remembering it like it was yesterday. And you probably have a similar, if you've walked with Jesus, if the book of Proverbs, this orienting book, has been part of your life, there are certain proverbs that might have kind of a cornerstone place in your life. Some land because they resonate as true on their face. Here's one. This was underlined in my Bible. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever takes crooked paths will be found out. And I remember just for me that landed in a season of my life where it was what our world needs is men and women of integrity who will say, will let their yes be yes and their no be no, and they will not take shortcuts, and they will do the right thing when no one is looking. And I remember that as a young person, that just landed on me and hit me. And as a high school student, I underlined it in my Bible, and now I'm a senior pastor. I'm looking at my old Bible, and I'm like, man, how significant that has been. That was orienting for me and continues to be orienting more for me. Like a foundation, like a cement foundation on a house. Like these were the sort of things that my life of faith was thinking about at the time. Some land because we've experienced them. Proverbs 16:2. All a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. And I that lands on me because I've experienced self-deception in my own life where I thought I was doing the right thing, but God weighs motives. And that at a later time, God had revealed, hey, you were doing that for the right reason. So whatever it is, however these land, there's hundreds of them. Not all of them land. Some of them land and form foundations for us as we go through our lives. I think one, as a youth, Proverbs 13:20, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. I think this question of who are you around? Who are you surrounded by? These are all questions that, again, are orienting in our life of faith. Some land because they're slightly humorous. I think this is one that's kind of humorous. Proverbs 17:28, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. I think the modern translation of that is better to say nothing so no one think you are a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Right? Okay. But the truth is, and I've known people like this, that they have not spoken a lot, but and you think they're wise because they, and maybe they are wise, they don't say anything. But I've also known some people who don't say anything, and it turned out they weren't as wise as you thought they were. So again, all of this, we experience these proverbs in our lives, and they have a sense of orienting us. Some stick because they have imagery that is hard to forget. Proverbs 26:11. Like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. If you have a dog that has thrown up and returned to it, you're like, oh, they do that. Right? And you realize that, yeah, there's something about the human condition. There's some kind of mechanism in which we repeat our own folly. And so but the imagery is hard to forget, like a dog that returns to its vomit. Awesome. Okay, maybe you have a dog, maybe you're trying to break a habit. It is colorful. Sometimes they stick because they have a depth that cannot be ignored, and they express our hopes in such a way that nothing else has. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. There's a depth to it. There's a hope to it. There's something of a, there's a principle about it, and we want it to be a promise. And this is when we realize that the book of Proverbs gives us truth. But it gives us truth in principle, not truth in mechanism. Why Proverbs? Proverbs is this orienting book, but it also is a book that confronts us in many ways. The book of Proverbs is confrontational in some ways. I was just talking with, I forget who I was talking with out there, but Proverbs can hit you right between the eyes. Got you, Gene, right? And the question is this, the book of Proverbs begs this question in ourselves is, what path am I on? Am I on the path of the righteous or am I on the path of the wicked? Am I on the path of wisdom or have I been seduced by folly in some area of my life? Again, Lady Wisdom knows a lot about everything. And there's so many different areas of life that Lady Wisdom might confront us on. And there are places where we all are skillful in life, but there are other places in life where we might not be as skillful, where we continue to need training even later in our lives. What path am I on? What is my primary orientation? Toward wisdom and skillfully navigating God's world, or am I being seduced by the shortcuts of folly? I think particularly with the book of Proverbs, the role of wisdom in this cultural moment, where we're at right now in our world, there's something of a need to return to the primary orienting questions of Proverbs. What will my words be like? In our cultural moment, that question has all been forgotten. With online, with the nature of political discourse, where we are, it is a primary orienting question. What will I do with my words? Will I recklessly use them and destroy or stir up? Or will my words provide healing? The book of Proverbs cycles back around because our cultural moments change, but in this cultural moment, sometimes we forget that this is a central orienting question. And Proverbs brings us back. These are central orienting questions about money, about sex, about power, about our words, about our relationships. And if we live in a cultural moment where we've forgotten those things, Proverbs brings us back. Lady Wisdom sits us down, makes us a meal, and reminds us what are some orienting things about our lives. What are some questions that we have to answer? And if we don't answer them, we will be seduced by folly. Will I operate in integrity, or will I say one thing and do another? Will I work for what is going to last in the long haul, or will I take shortcuts and know that what I'm going to do is going to fall apart? Am I all about substance, or am I just about image? These are the questions of our day that in many ways have been forgotten. And if we don't come back to the orientation of Proverbs, the orientation of wisdom, then we will forget. Proverbs, like I said, has played a great role in my life of faith. But one thing to note is that Proverbs is not enough. Back to my drive-thru experience at Pinkie's. I was oriented. Cash register, intercom, cooks. I knew everything I needed to do. But I didn't know what to do when someone didn't speak into the intercom. Or when someone couldn't hear me in the intercom. It wasn't my fault. It was their fault, right? Okay. It didn't tell me what to do when I knew what to do when one car would come through at a time. They would order, they would drive up to the window, I would hand them their stuff. But we had enough room in our drive-thru where you could get four cars at a time, all of which had made orders. I was taking the order of the fifth car while I was giving food to the first car and trying to figure out what needed to go in the second bag and the third bag and what drinks went with what. By that time, I'm a 17-year-old. I couldn't do that today, everybody. If you know me, that is not the way I roll. I'm not one of these, person who, multitasks. That's not me. I'm like a one thing at a time kind of guy, at a time. And so this was like the worst job in the world for me. I had been oriented, but I was not skilled in it. And in order to get better at it, I didn't need to talk to the manager. What I needed to talk to was the cooks and my fellow workers. It wasn't orientation that was going to get me through. It was another level of experiential wisdom. It was people to walk through with me. And so Proverbs has played a great role of faith in my life of faith. But orientation will only get you so far. Orientation is great. And I do think the book of Proverbs is great to get into your heart and into your soul. It is orienting. But Proverbs is silent about some things. It says nothing about salvation. It doesn't say anything about the covenants of God. It doesn't say anything about God's mercy and God's grace. It's about character formation, and it's about behavioral formation, and it is good orienting stuff. But sometimes if we just live in the book of Proverbs, we forget that the gospel is for the wicked, that the gospel is for bad decisions, that grace comes to the fool, that God reaches beyond simply the wise and into a world, and he finds those who are lost, and he finds them, and he brings them in, whether they are wise or not. Proverbs is wonderfully orienting, but sometimes it's not that we need good instruction. Sometimes we just need grace and forgiveness. And Proverbs doesn't talk about that stuff. It's good. It's good. It's orienting. And this is one of the things that we find about wisdom literature. Proverbs is a wonderful orienting book, but it's one part of wisdom. The righteous will prosper and the wicked will perish, except when they don't. When the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper, what do we do then? And what we find is we have other books. We have a book like Job, who asks the question about what happens when the righteous suffer. What happens when the wicked prosper? What do I do? We read Ecclesiastes. What do we do when I get everything and I'm still unfulfilled? So Proverbs is orienting, and it's wonderful and it's beautiful, but it is not everything. And we need to read it with that in mind, that it is orienting to us, and there it plays a role in our lives, and it forms about character formation. It's about behavioral formation. But sometimes God, oftentimes God, ultimately God says, you need more than that. The gospel is not just come be wise. The gospel is come with all of your sin and fall down before me. We need these instructions. We need them. I love the book of Proverbs because it reminds us that we need orienting seasons in our lives, seasons of protected growth, where God, for some reason, God gives us seasons in our lives where we just have this hedge of protection around us, where it's like a tree with a stake in the ground, and we're attached to the stake, and we can grow up straight because even if the winds blow, we're staked in, we have this hedge of protection. But there's also these seasons, and I don't entirely understand why, but I have my suspicions where God says, hey, I'm going to remove the hedge of protection, and we're going to let the wind blow, and we're going to let the rain fall, and it's not going to be protected. Maybe it's because the roots grow deeper during that time, and if you want to grow more, you've got to get the roots down. Maybe it's because, for whatever mysterious reason it is, that God will allow those trials in our lives. Proverbs has a profound role to play, and we need these seasons of protected growth. And I think as we go through more trials, I think there is a sense in which we look back fondly on seasons of protected growth, and we long for more seasons of protected growth, especially if we're in the middle of the valley. And Proverbs is really testifying about what is the instruction when we're in the season of protected growth. Sometimes when you look at the book of Proverbs and you're going through a hard time, you're like, it's great. It's like nails on a chalkboard. Because I can't listen to that. That's not the way the world is working. And so sometimes when Proverbs resonates with us, we realize we're in this season of orientation. But sometimes when we're disoriented, it can be very difficult to read, that we more gravitate towards a Job or an Ecclesiastes. But we want to pay attention. We need a season of protected growth where we can be formed, where our hearts are soft and receptive to the instruction of a father, and we in turn can pass along this as a legacy to our own children. I'm going to invite up the worship team, and as I invite them up, I just want us to hear again, in light of the instruction of a heavenly father that takes his children through seasons of protected growth, I just want you to hear this one more time. And I know many of you, this might be a verse that is already part of your foundation, but I just want you to hear it. Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. He will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes, but fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones.